Is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the heathen plain, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me. And walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, everyone, and happy Shabbat. My pleasure to be with you. We've got both Kirk and JB this evening. Fellas, apologize for last week. I was the victim of a hit-and-run accident, and so no one was injured other than I was one of those fortunate situations where there was a good Samaritan who wrote everything down, and therefore I was engaged with police trying to locate the perpetrator, which we did find, and it was quite the experience. And I had actually a very pleasant exchange with a police officer and an extraordinary good Samaritan. So it's a pleasure to be with you this evening. Commence again in Yashaya. We're in 318, which begins a really an interesting discussion on attire. But Kirk, you sent me an analysis of something that we talked about 2 weeks ago, which is the why Yahweh turned Yisrael over to feminine influences. And I came to the conclusion it was one of three things. One is that throughout time and until very recently, women have been more emotional than men. Men have been more rational. And today I think that men and women are equally emotional. And so I think that's part of it. And to know Yahweh, you've got to be rational. And then I also realized that as I talked from the LASIK experience, that it's proven that men and women's brains are wired differently. Something that no one would have known at the time this prophecy was written, but the fact is that women can multitask and men cannot. Men are much more focused. But multitasking takes your attention away from that which is important. And what I shared was that from my perspective, the single most important Hebrew verb, it's not my favorite, but I think it's the single most important Hebrew verb, is shamar. And while we translate shamar as either observe or closely examine and carefully consider, if you really want to get to the core of what shamar means, it means to focus. It means to focus on what is happening around you, what you can see, what you can experience, so that you can respond appropriately. And so shamar is the thing that Yahweh tells us all the time, that it's in our interest to focus on what he has to say. And so the way a man's brain throughout time, and this is not an opinion, it's scientific fact, men's brains are wired to focus. Women's are made to multitask. Both are very important. And, you know, I want to be really clear. So as I was sharing these possible motivations for Yahweh saying what he said is that throughout the Torah prophets and Psalms, men and women are treated equally. You know, where women are demeaned is in religion, like Pauline Christianity and Mohammedan feminine. Everything is important to Yahweh. The covenant is feminine. Torah, feminine. Feeling, feminine. And most important, Yahweh's name is feminine. And so it's interesting that he would talk about feminine characteristics. And then the last thing I shared is that religion is always presented under the guise of the whore of Babylon. And you know, he uses adultery and prostitution really to describe the lure, the appeal, and the seductiveness of religion. So my guess is it's one of those three. And then I also gave a history of America. But Kirk, you had some other ideas about why that was so.
Yeah, it kind of broke down to two things. I agreed with you in regards to the emotional side of it, because so much of politics and religion and patriotism cannot be sold to the American public based on any logic. We can't go to war on logic, because otherwise we'd never go. There's no logical reason to steal somebody else's stuff that never even attacked you. Let's say they're 20 years. So you have to have an emotional tug, or you have to hit them in the heart or get them all excited on some emotional level in order to charge up San Juan Hill. So I kind of looked at that to see if that was another aspect of this, and I agree with what you just said a minute ago as far as it's really the feminization.
Oh, the sexual appeal of a man that is a hero and risks his life, the soldier, the uniform, and the emotional appeal that caused men to march off to war in the First World War, which was a fraud. But they have an emotional appeal where men thought that they were doing the right thing to volunteer for a lie. Spanish-American War, same thing. World War II. It was an emotional call to arms. It wasn't a logical call. It wasn't a rational call. It wasn't a rational thing to do. We didn't perpetrate the war in a rational way. So, yeah, I think that's a lot of that. And, you look at America, we talk about suffrage, women's suffrage, and the influence of America. You would have thought that when women got the right to vote, women would steer the country to less military and less war. Yes. And yet you look at the timing of it, and America's been at war almost ever since. Mm-hmm. And went from having a military that was inconsequential to a military larger than the rest of the world combined.
Yeah.
So it's those connections are impossible to ignore. What else do you find?
Well, I'm not sure that a man could do this without the woman supporting. I mean, that was the underlying thing or the one that you think of less and less. You know, like you talk about the women in Islam, and then you wrote a great deal through this section on the church would collapse without women running it.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Christianity ceases to exist without women.
Yeah. And I think
it completely ceases to exist. It's dominated worldwide by women. It's about if you look at worldwide, it's almost an 80% of the attendees, and of the active attendees, about 90% is women. And we talked. I was talking with Rebecca on my drive up from Key Largo today, and we were talking about the African American community and what some of the issues are. And it's a female dominated community. The men just don't play a role. They're sperm donors, and they're out of it. And how important it is to understand that. You need to bring up a child with a male and a female influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of a given if you just think about it long enough. You mean, you say, well, so he could be, Yahweh could be addressing that issue in all this as well, although on the surface it looks like it's just he's just picking on women.
In Islam, I was just thinking for a moment, Islam ceases to exist without women being complicit. Because Islam is based on men dominating and controlling women. They've become property. If the women weren't willing to play along, and they are, and if they weren't willing to play religious dress-up and to be controlled entirely by men, the religion would cease. It has no other appeal.
Yeah.
Right. Who are some of the most vehement defenders of Islam? It's the women.
Our women. Mm-hmm. And it's the Stockholm Syndrome, of course.
Yeah.
It's those who are treated unmercifully. Seen after a while coming to identify with their tormentors. That's the whole mentality of Islam and women.
Yeah. So I think that obviously is part of what you had translated, because I confirmed pretty much to my satisfaction that all those words actually do mean all those things. But there was a couple of them that disturbed me, so I went to a third situation to see if it was there. Because of some key words in 3:16 and 3:17, and it was, in 3:16, I ran across the daughters of Zion, the daughters of Tishon.
Right.
And so I Googled it. I mean, I was rather shocked at what I found, and it said that predominantly refers to the daughters of Zion. I was thinking like the daughters of the American Revolution or something,
Right, huh?
Or, that sort of thing. But it didn't. It said that, and generally speaking, it refers to Jerusalem as a whole and Yehudim being the Jewish people,
mm-hmm.
and that the inhabitants or the citizens of Jerusalem, both male and female. So my question became, well, is this a metaphor that he's talking about, and they are just, he's talking there as in a general concept of the people of Jerusalem. I mean, after all, we are talking about the Yom Kippur date. The whole thing is talking about the troubles of Jacob, and in particular the very last days when he returns. So I said, okay, so that's not all women there that he's coming to. He's mad at.
It's not. Well, first of all, he's not mad at women. I don't think it's a metaphor. I mean, every bit of what we're reading here is presented as a word picture.
Yes.
The meaning is in the understanding of what the words represent. That's the way that God communicates. You've got to be able to think it through as to what do these things represent. What is the story that is being told that is applicable to our lives? And you're right. It's not just Israelites, but it's Israelites in Jerusalem and those that are clustered around Moriah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking about it. I've come across the term Daughters of Zion several times, and it seems to me it's almost always when it's being used in to speak of Israel in an emotional sense. It's used in Jeremiah about the lamenting and the mourning and them crying out in agony over their situation. It refers to them as the daughters of Zion. And again, same type of situation in Isaiah, and I can't remember what chapter I was in, but it was used the same way. It seems to be that it refers to like Israel as in general, but most specifically when they're in times of great emotional stress, or in this case, it seems more emotional driven wickedness, so to speak. So mm-hmm. it seems to speak of it when it's emotion behind them as opposed to action or anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of it too is that religion is an emotional appeal, faith. It has there is no intellectual appeal to religion, it's an emotional appeal. People feel good when they go into the church or the synagogue or the mosque. It makes them feel connected. Makes them feel safe.
You're the leader. It makes you feel powerful.
Right. It makes them feel included. So the entire appeal of religion is emotional. That's why Billy Graham was so effective at misleading people as an evangelist. He appealed to their emotions, never their intellect. And Yahweh is impossible to know through emotion. Yahweh is impossible to know through faith. You can only come to know him intellectually. That's how you come to know him.
You can come to have emotional feelings toward him after that.
But that's a derivative.
Know him.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's a derivative. Otherwise, if you approach emotionally through faith, you're going to have faith and emotional attachment to a fake religious God. The only way to know and actually feel genuine emotion for Yahweh is to know him, and the only way you can know him is intellectually. And the only way to know him intellectually.
Same with any person.
Focus.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, first time I met Patty, I found her attractive, I found her interesting, but I didn't love her because I didn't know anything about her. I came to love her by coming to know her. And the more I know her, the more that love grows. You know, and the opposite of that has been called infatuation or lust. And it's very rarely lasting.
Yeah.
But
there is a lot to what could be conveyed in terms of the difference between an emotional and intellectual appeal, and Yahweh has to be known, otherwise you're infatuated, are lusting for, worshiping, have put in your faith in a false religious god, and there's appeal to that. That's why religion sells.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think they build these fancy churches and have all of these ministries for any other purpose than to make people feel good, feel included, feel empowered, to feel uplifted. That's why they do it.
You know,
the whole bonus operandi behind it. So what else did you learn, Kirk?
Well, I went through a bunch of words. I figured out that the Daughters of Zion was Jerusalem as such. And then there was a couple as we got to 3:16, 3:17, there's a word called aches, which is the anklets. But it is also exactly the same word as they pronounce it as eeks, which is fetters and enslaving chains and putting on the stocks and so forth. So we're obviously talking about it. And I prefer to look at the verse through eeks, because we're talking about being trapped by religion more than anything else, and because this is what he's fed y'all with to begin with. So I went through everything I could know about that, and it turned out, that's more likely the what you should be getting out of that, at least I felt so. And then I went to Shafak, or Shafak, and which is translated as scabs or sores on the head. And I thought, well, sores on the head, I mean, I can see that people can get diseases and so forth in society and so forth like that. But I thought there's got to be more to it than just that. So when I analyze scabs on there, then it's a blight. It also has a lot of religious connotation to it. It goes from oppression to a variation on that, from oppression to a spreading of a malignant cancer, which is like a death, which is back to religion again. The same thing with political things and military stuff as well. And then I also went through that chain of events till I got to the scars on the head. And I said, well, you know, this would have been wonderful, and I think I addressed that to you, too. I said it would have been wonderful if he had used the word Rosh, because in Rosh, even though it's primarily talking about like a human head or a head of something, it does refer to mountains and hills and so forth, so that would have been wonderful. It would have been nice if he had thrown in there to begin with, if he had used Har or Harar, which is mountain and hills. But he used quad. And I thought to myself, oh, gosh, well, I guess that's where the trail ends. So I started looking at the letters. And the letters with the, when you use a quaff, you're talking about, and this will lead into the seven hills. The quaff is light on the horizon. It's a new day. We're talking about Yom Kippurim. So, okay, that's what has spirit. And then you have a dal or a delete, which is a doorway entranceway through Pesach and Matzah. And then you have a wa, all in quad wa. That's the increase, the enlargement of the family home and adoption firm. And I was thinking, well, where does that take place? Well, we've been doing Abraham for a long time now, and his and Yishak on the mountaintop. And so I said, okay, then there's probably a connection to a mountain, and that's not a lot of extrapolation. I don't think it's really the one thing I don't want to do is throw something out and be terribly, terribly wrong. But I said that's a lot of material there that could support that as a tertiary idea or a secondary idea. And I had never done this before, so I Googled all the mountains, the seven mountains in Jerusalem. And if this is a scar on the mountains, if these were plates and this disease permeated on the mountaintops as opposed to just a scab on a woman's head, then
a scab on Mount Moriah would be the dumb of the river.
Well, yeah. So yeah. You go. So I went to all.
That is a scab there on the top of the summit. A scab on the summit.
Absolutely, and you've got the Dome of the Rock, and you've got the religious.
That's the ultimate scab. Is an absolute perfectly wrong place to put that scab.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate religious scar.
Yeah.
The Dome of the Rock.
So, but if you go to the Mount of Olives, you've got a Pauline Christian shrine. You've got a Muslim majority village.
Right.
The mountain is called New Zion. I thought this is Chamber of the Holocaust, and it's also a giant Catholic cemetery. So I made a quick note on there that it's a whole mountain full of death and waste of souls. At least the way I would interpret that. Mount Corpus. This is maybe a little bit of a stretch to somebody, but it's the Hebrew University, and it's probably a lot more like most universities of the day. It's a lot more like socialist secular educations, which is the blight on all of us. Mount of Corruptions. The fifth one is religious. It has a Christian and Muslim institutions are all over it. And you have Mount Opal, which originally was the capital of Samaria, and it was the center of the for the 10 tribes of rebellious people that broke away from Yehuda.
Look at the Mount Sinai that the Roman Catholics established as Mount Sinai with their monastery there. And on top of that mountain, they built a Catholic monastery where they copied down the Christian New Testament.
Yeah.
Sinaiticus is one of the earliest complete versions of the Christian New Testament, Satan's ultimate manifesto.
Wow. I didn't know that, but that's good. Antonio Fortress Hill, which was during the period of Ptolemy, it was a Greek military fort, and then later became, of course, the wonderful Roman fortress.
That's right.
Right in the heart of it all. And, so
right, right in the heart of Jerusalem.
Yeah, so I think Yahweh was at least given is hinting at some other things in here.
Well, think about Hadrian, the scummiest
world
leader
right?
To ever exist. Hadrian built a shrine to himself and to Jupiter right on the Moriah.
Yeah.
So here's probably the third worst, maybe, I don't know if he's third or fourth worst human of all time. And he built a shrine to himself as a scab on the summit of Moriah.
Yeah.
Now, all of that fits.
Yeah, so I didn't think I was extrapolating that much. It was a wonderful, it was a pleasurable trip. It took a long time because it fit perfectly.
Yes, after 16 and 17, what we have is this whole, really a rant by Yahweh. I didn't think you could still call it a rant. Just because it's inspired by God doesn't mean it's not a rant. Rants, I think, are appropriate. And the rant is on feminine, female religious dress. It's the outward manifestation of religion in our day, is religious dress-up. And so when he says, I want to let you over to your feminine influences, well, there's no greater manifestation of religion in our today than religious dress-up. You know, the Islamic women, the women of Judaism and their little attire, and the Amish, and they're all in their little religious outfits. You know, the nuns, they're all displayed religious dress-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the men do, but for the most part, it's women who play religious dress-up.
Well, it's hard to top a habit, you know, those old fancy habits, with, especially the flying nuns that they used to make. They used to
right, or the burqa, that, black tent that fundamentalist Muslim women are forced to wear. And the burqas that they, the hijab that they wear over their heads. There's a Muslim congresswoman that now wants the rules of the house changed so that she could wear her religious dress up. Say, I'm a moron.
Not to waste our time with them.
Right. Yeah, God saying, all of those people that are playing religious dress up are screaming out, I'm a moron. I am really stupid. I'm going to dress in the garb of a false god. Perfect. And God's just insulted. What in the hell is wrong with you?
Well, it's obviously he's had enough, you know. And it's,
he's had more than enough.
He's
just disgusted by it. The nice thing about what follows is that it validates that our perspective is appropriate. You know, I am nauseated by religious dress-up. Nauseated by it. I have a funny, I have a lot of funny quirks, but one of my funny quirks is for breakfast, I actually like going into a Denny's. You know, they're hash browns, they're ultimate omelet. I know it's a dot, but the food's actually good.
Denny's is good.
And so I had a late breakfast this morning at a Denny's, and this woman walked to the counter, and this big T-shirt she was wearing, you know the name of God, the Lord Jesus Christ.
I wish I'd been there just to hear it.
Oh, God.
You tell her?
What the hell is wrong with you? Why would you be proclaiming, wearing such an utter lie? What is the emotional attachment to this religion that would cause you to do something, say something that stupid, that you'd wear a T-shirt that isn't even remotely accurate, that has a 0% chance of being accurate?
They're just completely ignorant. They have no clue.
There was no Jesus. And Christ is a Greek word. He certainly wasn't Greek. Didn't speak Greek. Based on a Greek verb that means to drug. I mean, come on. His name wasn't Jesus Christ. In fact, you couldn't even put the name. There's no J in the time, and there's not a single letter of Jesus that is consistent with Yosha. Even the S doesn't match because it's the SH sound, not the single S letter. Not a single letter that is compatible. And the name Yosha, if you don't know the name, you do not know him. And to give him a title other than diminished manifestation of Yahweh or Son as in one who comes of the Father's name, about the Father's business, which is what Son meant in those days. It's just ridiculous. And you know, we've talked about this so many times. There isn't a single place in the entire Torah, Prophets, and Psalms where Mashiach is used as a title and attributed to Yosha. And even in Daniel, where there's a prophecy of whether it's Yosha or Dode is a question, and there's a reference to Mashiach, it's not used as a noun, it's not used as a title. It's used as an adjective, modifying messenger. Also, I'm sorry, folks, it's not his title. And if it were his title, it's Mashiach. And titles go before names in English, not after them. It's not his last name. And his name was Yosha. And God's name is Yahweh. Just one and only name. But God, the emotional appeal of religion that causes people to parade around in religious dress that is stupid. It's nauseating for me, and I think it's far worse for God. Now, can you imagine being the creator of the universe telling humanity your name 7,000 times? having a name that's profoundly important that conveys so much about it, yourself. And telling humanity that's my only name and the only name I ever wish to be known, and then proving the validity of your text, only to have 99.999% of mankind either not know it or come up with an entirely different name. Think of the frustration. You'd have to say, why did I create these monsters? They're not worth knowing. And when they dress up and go into their religious, you know, and even those who don't play religious dress up but go up and wear their Sunday finest to church, blah! Wake up. Just sick. But we can't disassociate Yeshayahu 3:16 and 17 from 3:18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, that is condemning a religious dress up, the influence of women in religion, which was the, you know, that was the fourth point I tried to make that day. It's an undeniable influence of women in religion. It's dominant. I don't think men would be religious if it wasn't for the involvement of women.
Except
it either has access to women to
get
or to control women, to sway women, to influence women. Yeah. Well, Kirk, you ready to jump into Yeshayahu 3:18?
Yes, sir.
In that day. This is the, he's talking about cleaning house at prior to Yom Kippurim. In that day, Yahweh will reject and remove. You know, when Yahweh uses the verb tour, yeah, that's as bad as the verb azab. You don't want to be doing something that's followed by the verb tour. Will reject and remove. Will turn away and abolish. Discard and forsake. That which is associated with the elaborate ornamentation, the haughty splendor of the glorified adornments which attempt to beautify, of the bangles clasp upon the ankle as a fetter, as a trap to ensnare an animal. The sun disc medallions worn as headbands, as well as necklaces depicting crescent moons. 3:18. Yeah, I was going to jury it. I don't know if there's another way to translate chore other than reject, remove, abolish, discard, forsake, turn away from. And when it's Yahweh, the creator of the universe, saying that, man, you do not want to be associated with anything that falls. And what's interesting here is that in Hebrew, at the time this was written, people were far more capable of shamar than they are today, a focus. And I noticed it as I would read texts written in the 18th and 19th centuries. In those texts, the average sentence would be three or four lines long in a book. The average paragraph would be a page in a book. Now, I write in a more intense, pedantic style than most people do. Pack a lot of information, and I have some long sentences, but I try to intermix short and long sentences together, and I try to keep my paragraphs to five or six sentences at the most, because I realize that today's people's attention span isn't that long. And so if you start a sentence and you convey a significant amount of information somewhere, you're going to lose people along the way. Our focus just isn't that disciplined anymore. But this sentence, in that day, Yahweh will reject and remove. The list of things that follows that is really long. In fact, when I was translating this, I felt compelled to repeat, Yahweh will reject and remove, and then dot, 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 each of the things that follow. Because we're just not capable today of providing the necessary focus And it was interesting that, of course, this followed this assertion that I'm going to turn you over to the feminine influences, which would be throughout time the most overtly known, the most commonly known differential between men and women is logic versus emotion, ability to focus versus being more broad, multitasking. And what follows requires focus. There's no way to process it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing is that, you know, the first thing on that list, modified by haughty splendor, gaudy ornamentation, and the first thing that it modifies is an ankle fetter. Trapped. You know, a woman that wears a burqa is enslaved to that religion. A Mennonite woman or an Amish woman that plays religious dress up is saying, I'm a captive of that religion. What they're saying. And so God begins it with a word that speaks of fetters, ankle fetters. If you're wearing an ankle fetter, you can't walk worth a darn. How are you going to walk to God? How are you going to walk away from religion and politics if you're fettered? So the first thing is, the very thing that precludes most people from even considering Yahweh's word, because you cannot know him. You can't even begin this process unless you're able and willing to walk away from government and from religion. So the first thing on his list is you're fettered. I had a conversation this evening. My neighbors in Fort Lauderdale here. So it's a marvelous couple. And we were talking about some of the things that I had written. And they want to know, well, who's the audience that, reads this and accepts it? And I said, it only come from two groups of people. Either people who are agnostic, which is why so many Yehudim Jews have read and entered our company, because most Jews are secular humanists, and as secular and agnostics, they're open-minded. And I said, so that's first. And second, people who were religious, but have come to realize there's so much of the religion that's just not true, that they're open-minded to something that presents the truth in a credible way, and will reject the religion that they know is full of holes when presented with information that's credible, and that the religious person is fettered. No amount of evidence or reason will appeal to them. In fact, somebody in the chat room was writing that, religion is sexy. The trappings of religion are presented to be sexy. The military is presented to be sexy. With the uniforms and the power that it projects. Politics is presented to just exude sexual appeal. Now, these things are sexy. And God begins right there with the fetter. And if you're fettered by religion, you're incapable of walking away from it. You're trapped in it. Then no amount of evidence or reason is going to appeal to you. That's the first thing on the list. And of course, the religion that is the most satanic, the most overtly satanic religion in probably the history of humankind, is noted by the Crescent Moon. Islam. I mean, Islam, mm-hmm. Allah is literally Satan. Spends all of his time in hell. Is a terrorist. Needs to be worshipped. Bowed down to multiple times a day. Strictly obeyed. Every characteristic of Allah is satanic. So, the most satanic of all religions is the second depiction in the list. So that's quite a start. And of course, in the midst between those two is sun disc medallions worn as headbands. And so you might say, well, what's a sun disc medallion? But almost all elements of Christianity are sun-oriented.
Sun God.
You know, mm-hmm. Christmas is the sun of the sun. It comes the day that the sun begins to shine longer, and therefore it's on the winter equinox. Winter solstice, excuse me. And then, you know, on Easter Sunday is when the sun crosses the constellation of Taurus, the bull, and is was said in all these pagan religions to impregnate Mother Earth. 9 months later, of course, is Christmas, where the son of the sun is born. And steeples, the sign of Christianity, is where the sun is first kissed, the structure is first kissed by the sun and last touched by the sun at dawn and dusk. You know, it's the halos of Christianity, or sun dish. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of the crosses.
I love when churches are too cheap to put a period after S-U-N when abbreviating Sunday, so their billboards read Sun Worship 9:30. Well, mm-hmm. Well, at least they're truth in advertisement there.
The truth in advertising. You know, so much of it is based on sun worship. You know, the whole religion is based upon an adaptation of the Babylonian worship of the sun. Boy, I saw images the other day of an old church where just the gruesome crucifixes, and you said, God, it's not just dead God on a stick. It's tortured dead God nailed to a stick. That's the symbol of your religion.
Nice and weak.
It's a dead God tortured and nailed to a stick. Oh, despicable. So he has here the Federalist of Religion. He has the two big religions, the Sun Disk, which is Roman Catholicism, and then Islam. Right? Mm-hmm. The sunburst and the halos. So, the images are associated with the world's dominant religions, Roman Catholicism and Islam, each collectively claiming the lives of over 3 billion souls collectively. Nothing new under the sun or moon. This moon, let's give Yahweh credit for describing and condemning the religious imagery that now beguiles half of the world's population, and for doing so thousands of years in advance of either of these deadly epidemics. You know, Allah was one of many moon gods in Mecca, which is why the religion's principal symbol is a crescent moon. There are odes to the moon throughout the Quran, but Islam was not alone in this regard. The moon was considered divine in most pagan religions. Mm-hmm. Sundays are prevalent in Christendom, with halos and sunbursts depicted everywhere. The round skull cups worn by popes and cardinals and bishops and priests, they're all symbolic of the sun. Even the Christian cross is derived from sun god mythology. It's symbolic of the sun crossing the constellation of Taurus, the bull, and the vernal equinox. It's the day that the mother of God and the queen of heaven was impregnated by the sun's rays so that she could give birth to the son of God on the winter solstice, now celebrated as Easter and Christmas. It was all predated by the Ankh in Egyptian mythology. You know, the Ankh is the Christian cross, but at the top of it is the orbit of the sun. Unless we forget, what day do Christians worship their God?
Sunday.
Sundays. It's the Lord's Day, after all. So Yahweh will remove and reject the spherical pendants, the earrings suspended as spheres, which were also in the shape of the sun and the moon. The bracelets, the ornamental chains worn around the wrist designed to depict an umbilical cord used to denote one's leader or overseer. And the headscarves, the head coverings worn around the face or hair or shoulders. Boy, they are prevalent in Christianity and Islam and in Judaism. You know, the woman has to have their head covered in these religions. And so this is following. Yahweh will reject and remove So if you think you're doing a service to show your devotion to your God by wearing a headscarf, by wearing a religious bracelet, by wearing and showing off things that are spherical, God is saying, not in my home. I'm not going to be part of my family with that stuff. I don't know those people. I don't like those people. I reject those people. Well, you read this, and God is wholly and completely opposed to religious dress-up, which is why it is so amazing that in Islam, 800 million women play religious dress-up. And the various sects of Christianity, in terms of religious garb, I mean, the Orthodox Christians and Roman Catholics in many parts of the world play religious dress-up. And, of course, many of the Christian offshoots, religious dress-up. Yahweh will reject and remove the headdresses, patterned and patterned sashes, the chains, the wraparound coverings worn by women to confine and conceal themselves, the homes of the souls, and the enchanting charms. So the first of these is parer, head wraps, and aggrandizing headwear, which causes the wearer to fall. The chains are bangles, bracelets, and ankle chains, which are symbolic of marching in unison with the majority, of lying down to engage in sexual intercourse, and of being a prisoner, of stooping down as a captive. The wraparound coverings worn by women to confine and conceal themselves, this is kushrim, treasonous and conspiratorial slashes draped around women to bind them. An Islamic burqa comes to mind. And homes of the soul, what an interesting term. Bayath ha-nefesh. The receptacles, residences, containers of the soul. What is a container of the soul, guys?
Body.
Body. So Rihanna was saying, I'm going to reject the bodies of those who play religious dress-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're wearing the headscarves of worn by so many fundamentalist Christians and Muslims around the world. I'm just going to reject them. And I'm rejecting those who wear them.
Now, it's hard not to think of the rosary with the reference to the chains.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
It's also around the neck, yeah, those things.
Yeah, the rosary beads. But you know, the rosary beads and these this reference to the chains isn't just the worry beads of Roman Catholicism. And for those that don't know, because chanting the rosary, Hail Mary, the Lord is with thee, chanting the rosary is done like 20 times. It's like a Muslim bowing down 20 times a day to their God. And they're chanted thoughtlessly. And so those beads, you take one and you say, oh, Hail Mary, and then you go to the next one and say, Hail Mary, and you know when you've said enough Hail Marys when you've gone through the beads. That's what they're for. But the beads exist also in Islam. The beads exist throughout fundamentalist Christianity and Orthodox Christianity. That's what they're for. And so, you know, you're going to be a moron and you're going to chant something like that. Because I want to tell you, Mary ain't blessed. And the Lord most certainly ain't with her. And the Christian Mary is modeled after Astarte, the mother of God, queen of heaven, the mother and child. And Yahweh rails against her. So this is quite a list.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh will reject and remove the identifying rings, especially those which serve as symbols of authority, the signet rings and jewelry associated with religious slaves and temple prostitutes, in addition to the nose rings. Now, the nose rings, of course, were all designed to show that you're a captive. No one's a captive in God's home.
Yeah.
Right. No one's a captive in God's home. You're liberated. That's all about liberation and freedom. And, of course, the signet rings, just think about the Pope's ring that you have to kiss. Bishops have these rings. Yeah, come on. God's saying, if you're wearing a ring that has status, I am rejecting you.
We have
I'm removing you. I'm going to clean house, and you're a part of the debris that I'm sweeping away. I'm not just rejecting you, I'm removing you. Of course, if you're a perpetrator here, the removal isn't just you're gone. It's an express ticket to Sheol, into a black hole for your soul. So you strongly advise everyone who is listening, everyone who reads any of this, any thoughtful person who wants to know Yahweh and be part of his family, get rid of all traces of religion. No religious imagery. No crosses. No stars of David. No religious jewelry. No religious dress. No headscarves. No fetters. And I've never been a fan of ankle bracelets anyway. I think it's just kind of weird looking. And, you know, God's not saying that, you know, if you're a woman and your significant other gives you a tennis bracelet. Nothing wrong with wearing a bracelet. There's nothing wrong with wearing, you know, diamond studs as earrings. You know, that's not his issue here. His issue here, because he made it really clear, that is he's addressing things that are associated with, particularly with religion, and particularly halos and sun-related worship and moon-related worship. He's talking about Christianity and Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And the influences of it, those who are perpetrators and victims. And again, I'm repeating, Yahweh will reject and remove. I'm only doing it because if we went through this whole list without repeating that it all follows our attention spans, we couldn't keep up. But Yahweh will remove and reject. Oh, I love this one. The fancy white robes of state. The expensive white festal garments worn by the heads of religious or governmental institutions to represent their authority and purity and symbolic of that which is stripped off a person as plunder. Now, you look at the garb worn by Islamic heads of state, you know, the royal family, Saudi Arabia, for example, Kuwait. That's the white robes. You look at what the Pope wears. That's the white robes, right? Man, anybody wearing a white robe, the heads of state of Islamic countries or the Pope, you're in serious trouble.
That's what pretty much every movie depicts Jesus as wearing.
Oh, yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
A big white robe.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they've never bothered to read any of this.
Mm-hmm. I'll guarantee he did not wear a white robe. As a matter of fact, white would be the last color that most people would have worn during the day. There were no laundry mats. You know, there were no dry cleaners. There were no paved roads. Most homes didn't have anything other than a dirt floor. Public buildings had dirt
even
floors.
Even if it started white, it didn't stay that way long.
Oh, my goodness. It'd be dirty, but no. Could you make a garment of white wool? Yeah, but it's not going to be white very long. Of linen? Yeah, but it's not going to be white very long. It was a whole different time. You know, you wouldn't go to your supermarket and pick up Tide.
Or bleach.
the soaps were crude back in the day.
Handmade.
Expensive.
You know, the only reason that they wear white cowboy hats in the movies, right? That's because they put that on the star. I mean, on the head actor, the most important actor, so that your eye will follow him around the thing. Nobody wear. I grew up with horses. White hat is about the stupidest thing you can wear, unless you're in a parade or something.
Right. No one wears a white hat in real life. No one who works for a living wears white. Call it white collar crime. I want to tell you, even in an office setting, the minority of dress shirts are white. Yeah, it's just white, isn't it?
Yeah. The only people I know that wear white to work is my dad was a painter, and he had his painters white. That's because they're going to get covered and splattered in paint all the time anyways.
Right.
And he would actually literally use, like, his pants as a, to figure out what
white rod, So Yahweh will reject and remove the fancy white robes of state. The capes, the heavy wraparound apparel, mantle, and tunic, which due to the physical exhaustion associated with wearing it causes the wearer to become feeble and faint, used to describe an overwhelmed soul, incapacitated judgment, malnourished children, manat, from manat, that which belittles and diminishes, causing a soul to languish. The veils and shawls worn by women. Boy, that's Islamic Christianity. Veils and shawls. Oh, actually, Jewish women wear shawls too. It's part of the attire. That which is dressed to span the breadth of something worn by those who rear children, which requires them to walk, taking quick little steps. And if you take those little quick little stutter steps, you're not standing upright, digging in your heels. You're the antithesis of a Jacob.
You know, this is pretty clear, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yahweh was not a bad communicator. I mean, I've looked them all up, and that's exactly what he says. I mean, it's the...
Mitzvah. It's from Ta'am as the root, discretion and judgment in response to decrees and commands, and taste regarding that which is consumed in Tapal and Paka, to cover over and conceal, smearing, or plastering over the directions, and disbursement of a contagion.
That disease. Wow. Paul brothers.
In addition to the headbands used to hold precious metals, the strong bags and purses, the ornamental accessories, the secure tassels designed to carry and conceal wealth, as well as the cakes and bread associated with religious customs. This word, it can mean so many different things, whether it's a leather handbag that is designed to hold precious metals. And, you think of the merchants of Europe and the bankers of Europe and their little handbags and all the wealth, the gold that they would carry in them. Or you think of today's world, you go into a Louis Vuitton store and the handbags are $5,000. You go into a department store and you look at a designer handbag, $2,000-$3,000. And they're just unbelievably expensive. With a Kate Spade
fancy wallet.
Before she committed suicide, Kate Spade made a fortune by making women's fashion handbags, I put in air quotes, affordable. So hers are only $1,000 versus the competitors that were $2,000 and $3,000. You go into a department store and you look at these things and you say, wait a minute, you just want to gag when you see the price. Why are people paying so much money for a label, for a handbag, and to carry their wealth around? And of course, for much of Western society, it was the merchants and the bankers that were carrying their wealth around in these handbags. God said, that's your God. That's what's important to you. Your precious metals. Look at the Roman Catholics and their pursuit of precious metals and ornamental accessories, secure vessels. And I don't know of any religion that's more overtly characterized by terror than Roman Catholicism. And, of course, it's based on Jaret, which is a pen. To pen a message or engrave an object associated with astrology, the Latin Vulgate.
Mm-hmm.
To pen a message associated with astrology and the occult. It's a Latin Vulgate. And to a large degree, even Sir Francis Bacon's King James Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are far-reaching terms with profound implications. And God's not finished. No, for him to take up this much text and to list this many things, he's begging us to consider the nuances of these words, to consider the roots of these words, to peel back the layers. And say, do you think God cares about a stupid piece of jewelry? Think he cares about what people are wearing unless what they're wearing is symbolic of something that is worthy of him specifically saying, I'm going to reject and remove? And this is reject and remove before he comes. So when you're rejected and removed at that time, that's over. I mean, that's either annihilation or eternal damnation. So for him to have this list, it's because of what religious dress-up represents. And Kirk, you took the time to look up these words.
Yeah.
That's what they mean, isn't it? I mean, there's really...
I've got like Tourette's, so you were talking about this, an engraving too, or a stylus for writing. It can also be for writing letters and papal edicts and laws and decrees and a bag to carry tools and money in. It's a... Vatican bankers will probably have a good one on their cell.
Oh, boy, but yeah, Vatican banker with their Vulgate.
Yeah.
Their Bibles.
All of your Bibles. Wow. You can't miss it.
No, you can't miss it. Oh, it's undeniable, and the words are wide-ranging. And they're a list of what God says, no. You know, having composed the best documented, most complete chronological and contextual presentation of the Quran, I came to realize that Muhammad and Allah are one and the same, adversarial and satanic, and that the religion took root largely because it gave men complete mastery over women. It's a really profound statement. The veil is the outward symbol of a woman's submission. And considering the fact that Muhammad was a sexual pervert, both a pedophile and a rapist, it's appalling that hundreds of millions of women cloaked themselves in a manner that he prescribed. So I find it repugnant, as to Scott. But unlike me, Yahweh can do something about it. He's going to abolish the veil and remove from his presence all of those who were beguiled into wearing religious costumes. Now, there's a 5-day span between the time that Yahweh returns on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, October 2nd, 2033, on the Roman Catholic calendar, and the beginning of the millennial celebration of the Shabbat, beginning on Sukkah, Friday at sunset on October 7th. This transformation and symbolic exposition will transpire during that time. It will commence with the rejection of these things and conclude with the removal of those wearing them. So we now have the list of all those things going to remove. And then we hear this. And then it will come to exist that instead of aromatic spiced perfumes. And I'll read here that these are the odors that are so profound, so pungent in religious centers, whether they're by monks or by in Roman Catholic churches, where they're all burning their incense. So it shall come to exist instead of incense, the stench of decay will be present. Why? Because those that God is removing, they're rotten.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening. They're rotten to the core. And so they're not going to hide the fact that they're rotten with incense anymore. There's not enough perfume in the world to cover up the stench of religion, for God's sake. The stench and decay will be present in the place of a utility belt for weapons, including a scabbard. It's a leather belt to carry implements of war, especially swords and daggers. There'll be a tethering rope, a braided cord to control the prisoners by encircling them. A nafash, that which strikes and encompasses and uses in conjunction with a forbidden cult. So, there'll become a time when the militaries will be no more. God will have struck them dead.
Mm-hmm.
They'll all be gone. There'll be no more warriors. No more troops. Instead, a vast population of people that are bound to the religion. That's why religion is based upon the Latin word to rebind. Ligon is a ligament that binds the bones together. And so religion is to rebind. They're bound. What's left after the militaries are gone are simply the religious, those who are bound, religion. And instead of exercising one's energy, laboring over covert hairstyles, there'll be baldness. You know, so many beauty salons are going to have our hair just all perfect, so we look beautiful. You know, it's on the outside. God said, no, you're bald, you're naked. There's nothing beautiful there. It's ugly, it's repulsive. In my view, you're naked and shameful. There's no hidingness. No more braided locks of well-dressed coats of hair artistically prepared. You know, it's even in fundamentalist Judaism, the Orthodox Jews, they have that little curly cue. Comes down the side of their head. Have you ever noticed that with the black cast? There's a little curly Q coming down the side of the head. He said, no, you're just bald. Not buying any of that. Then in place of ornamental robes and of ignorance, of fine clothing and beautiful suits and quality garments worn by those who do not understand, there'll be a sarong of humiliating sackcloth. It's the comeuppance, if you will, but it's in this case, it's the comedownance. Now, we use the comeuppance as kind of a colloquial way of those who are just too high on themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being cut down. They get their comeuppance. Now, it's really the comedownance. What happens is those that sought to be above it all, those who sought to wear the religious dress and the cardinals and popes' robes, the rabbinical robes, the robes of the imams, the robes of the heads of state, the Islamic royalty robes. No, nothing but a sarong, a humiliating sackcloth. That's how God sees them. And they're not going to have their religious costumes anymore, their political costumes anymore. Just, no, you're not going to wear your beautiful suit and trying to impress anybody. you know, the politicians and the bankers with all of their fancy $5,000 and $6,000 suits. He says, no, it's just nothing but sackcloth. I'm not buying it anymore. So no robes of ignorance, just as wrong, bound in a simple plain wraparound dress of humiliating sackcloth, of common, uncomfortable, and coarse goat hair, causes discomfort. Serving as a physical stigma and brand key, a sign of ownership, instead of beauty, there'd be shame.
Well, this is scathing, isn't it?
Wow. It is scathing. So, you know, if you've got the fancy wardrobe, and that wardrobe is designed to show power and authority, you know, that, you know, you're the big-time operator in business, got that fancy suit.
Our suit.
That you're wearing the general's or the officer's uniform. You've got the popes, the cardinals, the bishops, fancy robes. You know, you're the guy standing up in front of the church in your fancy robes. Yeah, God said no. No, you're wearing garments of shame. The physical stigma and the brand of being owned. Humiliating sackcloth. I view this as a little bit like, you know, when Yeshua says every knee shall bow, what he's talking about is religious and political leaders, and all of them will be bowed down in judgment. It's God's ideas that you chose to lord over my people, to control them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a consequence for that. There's not a consequence for being a victim. You know, your soul's extinguished. There's no penalty for that. But to be fair, to be just, there has to be a consequence for leading people away, from lording over them, for trying to control them. And this is the consequence. It's like having them bow down in judgment. Well, rather than wearing their fancy papal robes, nothing but a sackcloth, naked, other than that, showing those ugly, old, crinkled up bodies. Pope's not going to look real prestigious like that, is he? Can you imagine that old fart wearing nothing but a sackcloth, a sarong around his waist?
That'd rule them out.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
They'll be seen for what they are instead of what they pretend.
Right. He's going to show them for who they are as opposed to what they've tried to project. Yeah, it's truly perfect. The physical stigma and brand of being owned. A garment of shame. Males of your species, math-ata, adult males, from mathae to questionably spread out and extend while being controlled by an authority. So males of your species, by the sword, they shall fall, along with your most capable warriors in the battlefield. My God's saying that, you know, that militaries are fallen. America has created the most powerful military in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Airplanes that are awesomely powerful and destructive. Ships, awesomely powerful and destructive. Tanks and cannons and guns, bombs that are awesomely powerful and destructive, and all manner of weapons of mass destruction, atomic bombs. My God, they're no match for God. All of the weapons of war that we have as humans built for our own protection, to exert our authority, to make us feel safe.
Well,
just gone in an instant.
Yeah.
It's God saying, that was the dumbest thing. Well, it's the second dumbest thing you ever did. The dumbest thing you did is you you chose religion over a relationship with me. Mm-hmm. That was the dumbest thing you ever could have done. But the second dumbest thing you could have done is, rather than trusting and relying in me, you put your trust and reliance in your military. And how many times are Americans told we owe a debt of gratitude to the soldier for making a sacrifice so that we could be free?
You feel freer?
If that's what your belief, if you think your military is providing your freedom, your liberty, then God wants you to know that no. They're meaningless. In fact, they're worse than meaningless. They're counterproductive. That was a really stupid choice. They're not going to protect you. They never did protect you. It's not their purpose. Purpose is to control those in the military so that they can be a mechanism of control by those who control them. Mm-hmm. And I would say the military in every country in the history of humanity is the least free institution in those countries. They don't provide freedom. They're the ultimate freedom sink, the black hole of freedom, the least free institution in the history of the world is militaries. They're command and control. And they're used by those who control the military to exert their influence, their control, so that other people are deprived of life and liberty and free will.
If somebody wants to take their freedom away, the only way they can do that is by having the military there to reinforce them. Otherwise, they take your freedom away, we stand up to them and we say no. But now we got to stand up to a military that can, you know, put every other military in the world in check. And what hope do we have?
Military is trained to do two things.
Slowly eroded.
To destroy and to kill. Every weapon is designed to either destroy or to kill. And God's not impressed with those things. He hates those things. Death and destruction are what he hates. He created this world. Thinks it's beautiful. He conceived life. And that which destroys this world and takes away life, and that which is a mechanism of control that uses death and destruction, nothing God hates more. So that's what he's saying here. Mills of your species, by the sword they shall fall. Now, when they're falling by the sword, is that God killing them?
No, they're killing each other, mostly.
Yeah, that's right.
The two big wars, the last two big wars.
Yeah, two big wars. Man wipes out fellow man. Hmm. Now, I've always said that if Islam were quarantined, Muslims would continue to kill Muslims, but they would not be able to kill anyone else. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, armies do what armies do. And opposing armies are simply going to kill. Now, how many people died as a result of World War II?
Yeah.
The smallest number is 50 million. The biggest number is closer to 100 million.
Yeah.
How many people died as a result of what Woodrow Wilson advanced in chemical warfare after the horrible chemical warfare of World War One, you know, where chemicals were used to maim and to blind and to kill, and then the chemical warfare of what's called the Spanish flu. How many people died? 100 million?
Yeah. That's the number. I've got at least that number. Pretty.
3 or 4 decades thereafter, 3 decades thereafter, another 100 million die in. In World War II?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nothing to how many are going to die in World War III and World War IV. All on our horizon. Your most capable warriors are going to fall on the battlefield. Man's going to go to war with his fellow man. And you know, I've always viewed that the death toll of the time of Jacob's troubles was called the tribulation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that last 7 years, beginning the fall of 2026 and concluding in the fall of 2033 and the Roman pagan calendar ending in year 6000 Yah. the vast and overwhelming preponderance of the deaths are either natural disasters, Carne Viejo, that volcanic island off the coast of Spain, creating an avalanche that cascades into the ocean, creating a tsunami that wipes out so many in Europe and the United States. And maybe it's triggered by POFUS when it hits, which will be at the same time.
Yeah.
And it'll wipe out the world's merchant fleets and the world's delivery of oil, for example, and in the navies, and a huge percentage of the world's population. Those are natural disasters. And, the Earth, prior to that time, between earthquakes and tsunamis and hurricanes and tornadoes, all natural disasters. And, well, global warming is a myth. Climate change is not.
Mm-hmm.
The climate's changing, and it isn't pretty. What's happening around the world. And, I've managed just being stunningly arrogant to think that he can stop it. Man didn't cause it. Man can't stop it. But the time of the Earth is winding down, and it's getting really, really nasty out there. And on top of that, there's going to be the true worst wars that humankind have ever fought. One of those wars is going to end with the elements themselves melting with intense heat, according to the prophets. It's going to be a nuclear exchange between the superpowers, the United States and Europe, Russia and China, followed by a mass multitude of, Islamic terrorists being stunningly murderous, actually preceding it, followed by the nuclear holocaust, followed by, Armageddon, the marching of militaries. It's, and then before Yom Kippur, God's just going to say enough. It's just over. It isn't going to happen anymore. But man will have wiped out, either from natural causes or nuclear war or just conventional militaries, plagues and pandemic. So I think that's probably in the range of 90% of humanity is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And all God's going to do is stop it and clean house. I don't think there's anything here that God is perpetrating. I just think it's the natural course of things. We can't stop it, but we can warn people that it's coming and tell them to get out of their religious dress up. Stop putting their faith in religion. Stop trusting their military. Shake off the emotional response and focus on what God has to say and pay attention to what he has to say. Otherwise, you're going to be among those who are rejected and removed. You'll be among those who are wiped out as part of militaries that are going to sweep up them with emotion. So many people around the world. Males of your species, by the sword they shall fall. Your most capable warriors in the battlefield. That doesn't sound like God supporting our troops, does it?
No. That sounds like they.
Doesn't sound like the military is going to prevail, does it? Doesn't sound like that's an institution you should trust to put your faith in. Certainly, God isn't saying, let's support our troops. In God we trust. No. You don't trust in God, you trust in your church. You're trusting your military.
We post this outside the recruitment center for every Army, Navy, and Marine, area. Just post this on the
board. Males of your species, according to God, shall die by the sword. They shall fall along with your most capable warriors in the battlefield. I was talking earlier today with Rebecca. We were reading, Kirk, what you had written over dinner.
Where?
And, for somebody that doesn't know the whole history of what we were trying to discuss as to what the feminization of society was all about, it comes across a little bit of women. This is woman bashing. It's nothing of the sort, but it you really got to pay attention to the influence that God's talking about in society and those that are idolized in our society. We wiped out to the last. They're going to fall in the battlefield, and you know it's just going to be all over. But what I told her about it, I said, listen, you know, Yahweh is very protective of women, and what you would find is that Kirk, JB, and I, when we host the show, we will all say the same thing, that we will, just as Yahweh has, we will aggressively expose and condemn any doctrine that's hostile to women, Pauline Christianity, Mohammed's Islam, the U.S. military, the bastions of socialist secular humanism. Women are far more vulnerable in an academic institution. The more liberal the institution, the more vulnerable women are to sexual abuse. And a woman is never more vulnerable than she is in the U.S. military, at least in the West. And, of course, in Islam, women are treated like
cattle anyway.
Cattle. And so we will openly and unequivocally expose and condemn, using words, doctrines which encourage men to abuse women.
About that, yes.
And I said, so let's get a personal situation, though, because if we were to see an innocent victim we don't know, a woman or a child, being attacked by a man. As a man, we would think it true. You know, we would go initially, knowing Yahweh and the fact that we are of comfort and knowing that our eternity is sealed with Him, we up to a point would attempt to engage. If I saw a man abusing a woman, I would engage to try to stop it. Now, if that man brought out a knife or a gun, and there were multiples of them, and now I knew that my likelihood of stopping them when they had outnumbered me and they had weapons was nil, and my odds of getting killed in the process of trying to stop them was high, at that point, intellectually, rationally, to proceed would be stupid. It would accomplish nothing and lose the time that we have here to contribute and time with loved ones. That would be stupid. Now, if it was my daughter or wife or girlfriend or somebody that I care deeply about, I'm not going to make that calculation. I'm going to risk it all.
No.
You know, JB, if it was your daughter, your wife, you'd risk it all. You wouldn't even bother to think about the consequence of it. And, you know, that's the kind of attitude I think God wants us to have. He is overtly exposing and condemning these things which have a negative and deadly and abusive influence on humankind, and does so with our words. And then when it comes to His presence and Him having the opportunity to stop those, killing those He doesn't know, it's going to be a calculus. He's going to think that through. There's not a lot of those that He's going to intervene and say, just like, I wouldn't risk my life when there was virtually no chance of success to save someone I did not know. No, He's not either. But when it comes to saving His children, Israel, in Jerusalem, from the attacks of these people, the abuse of them, that's what He's going to do. He's going to intervene. And He's going to use force at that point. The military is going to be wiped out. And it's exactly what any loving parent would do. He's explaining the proper response. Because He's not talking about that He's going to protect the men who, you know, are doing their patriotic duty. They said they're just going to die. I'm not going to intervene on their behalf. They're going to die. There's no reason to intervene on their behalf. Because they're prone to kill each other. They're prone to believe they rubbish. They don't know me. And they're never going to know me. So I'm not going to intervene to save them.
And letting them live and survive into the millennial kingdom would be a hindrance on everyone else.
That's correct. So he said, so he is not, it's just like calculus again. So they're going to kill a lot of people, but God's not going to intervene. He's only going to intervene by force to protect those he knows and loves. Israel and Jerusalem, the daughters of Zion. That's what this is all saying. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so profound. Well, we're done for this evening. Tomorrow night, I've got one of the first interviews that I've done in a long time. Jerry McLaughlin is a publicist from, so many years ago, has become a member of the covenant and a good friend. Has a book on a show that's on Salem Radio Network, but it's a show of, as he says it, truth seekers. I will say, when I hear Salem, my initial reaction is, no, there's a whole lot of people on Salem that are going to be religious, and a lot of them are going to be conspiratorial kinds of people. A lot of them are going to be fundamentalists, right-wing Republicans, and a lot of Christians, and they're just not open to the message. Mm-hmm. And in fact, hostile to it.
Yes.
But anyway, I'm scheduled for a two-hour interview between 10 and 12 tomorrow. And so we'll see how that...
A.M. or P.M.?
Yeah, well, East Coast time, 10 and 12, so earlier otherwise. I'll send the show information out, Kirk, and to JB, and you guys can share it to Jackie, too, and you guys can distribute if anybody wants to listen in.
Absolutely.
If you're on the East Coast, I wouldn't encourage it. It's a little late, but, in Central Time is a little better, and Pacific Time, of course, it's a lot better. But it's the first one I've done in a long time, and the topic this time is strictly, every question is, can you trust the text of your English Bible? Is there such a thing as a New Testament? A New Testament. Is there anything that was said in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that he negated? Is Paul credible? What were the things that God asked of Abraham?
You think you'll make Abraham whole 2 hours?
Even those conditions. So those are the kind of topics that we'll be discussing. Those are the 10, 12 questions that we're going to walk through.
Shoot me the link and all the information. I'll share it with the
everyone was listen to that.
Okay. Yeah.
I know what you're going to say. I'm just hoping he'll let you have the whole 2 hours.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know what you're going to say. I'm more interested in how they're going to react.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't. It's something that I essentially stopped doing because, if you're almost all talk radio is either overtly political, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, right wing, Republican, pro Trump, enthusiast, or it's the kind of things like Coast to Coast, which are conspiracy, crazy conspiracy nuts. Or there's a number of shows now that are socialist, secular, humanist, liberal. And then there's huge swaths today. I remember driving across the country last time I did it, there's just the radio. And in fact, even here in Fort Lauderdale, via listening radio, that the disproportionate number of the channels are religious. And so, I've just kind of come to the conclusion that, there's not much of an audience out there in the broad spectrum. It's a very small percentage of people that are willing to walk away from religion and politics and militarism and the things that God says you've got to walk away from. No, they're fettered. They're bound and fettered. And incapable of processing.
Back when I was listening to a lot of talk radio, one of my favorite hosts was Neil Bortz, and one thing I did like about him was a bit of honesty, and he would always say, my job is to get listeners to listen and to entertain and get you to come back. If I lie, I have to lie to you to entertain you, I will lie to you because that is what will draw in an audience. My job is to get an audience to sell advertisements to.
Right.
least he was honest about it, and that's all of them. They pretend, oh, I'm a crusader for the truth. No, you're trying to get an audience, and you're going to say whatever it takes to say to get the most amount of people you think to listen to you.
Right. You know, a couple of days here, I've been driving, and I've listened to a little bit of Rush Limbaugh, a little bit of Sean Hannity, just out of curiosity as to what they were promoting. And almost all of them are trying to distract people from the Trump investigation on the Russian collusion, which I do think is, upon is trumped up. I don't think there was any Russian collusion. And I'm not buying the Russian, Russia is the boogeyman here. I think it's all a setup to reestablish NATO and to justify a bigger military and bigger government and more control over people and people making greater sacrifices to government. And the structure of society is going forward under the control mechanisms that have been put in place. And so you have to have a boogeyman, and Russia's been placed as the role of the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
But the distract, they want to present Hillary Clinton and that the dossier that was bought by the Democrats to create this myth that the Russians swayed the U.S. elections as far more criminal, and that's all they want to talk about. And it's like, oh, come on, what Hillary Clinton did or didn't do in terms of dirty politics is just flat out irrelevant. She lost. It's over. Get over it. And why doesn't somebody have the audacity to say that if the Russian influence over the election, if Russia could influence our election by buying social media ads, if that is their influence
of our people,
what's wrong with us? If Russia somehow, and you know, Assange from WikiLeaks says the source of the DNC emails and Hillary Clinton's emails was not from Russia. He's the guy that knows. So, no, it wasn't from Russia. He didn't have any. He's not under Russian authority. It's just not willing from Russia. And think of it. And no one just will say this. There's only one reason that Hillary Clinton's emails and the DNC's emails had a negative effect, not on a minority of Americans. It was a very small percentage, because the majority of Americans still voted for Hillary Clinton, even when the evidence was presented that she was a lying scum. Totally disingenuous. That's what her emails proved. And yet, the majority of people who voted for her anyway. But if your own emails condemn you, then don't blame somebody for making them public.
Yeah.
Own it and say,
hey, I shouldn't have resisted. That's fine. Yeah, if the content hadn't been what it was, it wouldn't have mattered. So the content,
that's correct.
The issue is not how it was released. Who cares how it was released?
Correct. And that's how the elections were somehow influenced. Then we've missed the boat. Then shame on us. Shame on us for promoting politicians that are disingenuous. Shame on us. Shame on us for not caring and having the majority of people, even when confronted by the evidence that the politician you're voting for is disingenuous, don't even care. Shame on us for being influenced by social media as opposed to facts, reason, and evidence. Shame on us. But that's all they want to talk about. Oh, my gosh. And, of course, intermixed in all that is the support of our troops and first responders and the heroes of our society. Oh, my God. The liars. The manipulators. Those who have no freedom.
I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and talking about the first responders. There's two groups of the first responders I do have a lot of respect for. Firefighters. I have nothing but respect for someone who's going to go look at a fire and go, I'm going to go in there and get people out. And then, your emergency paramedics. who again go into a bad situation and with no power, no real authority, no control. They go in there to help and do the best they can. I have respect for those two groups. Police officers, by and large, I have nothing but disdain for, and that's based on a lot of personal and public experience. And the military, same thing. You're either stupid and have been duped, or you're outright malicious. And either way, I don't really have any respect for you.
Yeah. I'm reading a letter from Jerry McLaughlin right now. It says... this is written by the producer of this show. The show is Arc Midnight. So it's called Arc Midnight with John B. Wells. So Arc Midnight with John B. Wells. It begins, and I was misled, at 11 Eastern Standard Time. For a 2-hour interview. So rather than 10 to 12, it is 11 to 1. I probably wouldn't have agreed to it if I knew that it was going to end at 1 o'clock. I really don't like doing that. And the answer is we're really looking forward to this one. Just announced on Facebook. Thank you very much, Jerry, for all of your great talent. Well, so I'm on. I'm committed. So it's tomorrow night on the John B. Wells show, which is called The Arc Midnight, and it's syndicated on Salem.
Craig?
Yes.
I can guess that you have to pay to listen to John B. Wells.
Oh, really?
He's only...
Well, I think you're right, and that John B. Wells has two shows.
Oh.
John B. Wells... But the dominant show is a pay where we have to pay, I think it's $60 a year to listen to a show. And he does that show on Blog Talk Radio. And you pay $60 a year. And I think that he's making like $40 or $50 million a year on that pay for listen show. But... The way that he draws people into that show is he has a show on Salem.
People, Craig.
But yeah, right. Yeah, but the moment you charge people for Yahweh's message, you are really, really, really in trouble. It ought to be something that you never even contemplate for a nanosecond, the idea of charging people for Yahweh's message. Yeah, but he has a show, Terry, that is... that is syndicated on Salem, which is the Christian radio network. Salem, I think, is probably in the top 2 or 3 now radio networks in the country, particularly with the fall of Clear Channel and some of the others. So this is his show that's freely broadcast, The Arc of Midnight. With John B. Wells, but you are correct. His primary show is a pay-for-listen.
That's good.
And the reason I said no to the pay-to-listen show is it's all video. And I have not done any video on Yah's message. And I've chosen not to do it for two reasons. One is that it's one thing for God to say, I want to protect you. It's another thing for taunting those who would try to harm me and those I love. And having my image out there...
I honestly don't think going onto a show that people pay to listen to this guy is going to probably bring anybody in.
No, that's correct. And so I don't do video for that reason. I don't do video because when I was doing television, which I did a lot of television back before I knew Yahweh, it is the ultimate stroke of ego. And, when your image becomes as important, if not more important, than your message, how you look and sound when you're communicating something is you get all made up and dolled up for it. It's the ultimate gilding of the individual. There's just something fundamentally wrong with that when you're sharing God's word.
Well, and then it becomes much less about the message and much more about the presentation. Yeah, you know, they say that was
right,
why
the messenger.
Nixon
right.
The antithesis is what we want. In the, you know, that election was, you know, how he looked on stage, and people, you know, related to and liked the way Kennedy looked. It had nothing to do with what he was saying. You know, no one, not that I agree with him. No, he looked good up there. So, and,
yeah,
the visual media lends itself to that much more.
Yes. It does.
The audio media is much more, you know, there is a bit of the how you sound and how you come across, but much more of listening to audio. Yeah, it's me, that's why I love writing, is, you know, writing isn't necessarily about how you sound or anything like that. It's about the content. You know, audio is a little less about the content, but still more focused on it, and then you get to video, and it's very little about the content. I mean, just look at most national debates.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yep, it's exactly true, because they're not debates. They're who looks better.
Point.
Yeah.
Well, and again, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, emotion. You know, so much of the debates aren't about proving a point or, you know proving
no
why
debate.
You're right and the opponent's wrong. It's all about invoking emotion and creating an emotional response in people so that they will like you and come to vote for you. You're not
well, actually, the majority of it
is
criticizing your opponent in a way.
Well, yeah, it's not even about why you couldn't vote for them.
Correct.
Yeah, it's about why you couldn't vote for them.
Correct.
But it's not about winning people over through argument and rhetoric to understand your point of view. It's about criticizing the other person and showing how they're wrong and they're horrible. And it's all about invoking that emotional feeling.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. So it'll be interesting. Again, I wouldn't have done it if I'd known that it was going to start at 11. It gets a little late for me. I'd go to 1, but you know, I'm going to do it. I'm not optimistic because it's on Salem. I'm not optimistic because the host has came out of Coast to Coast, which was so much conspiracy. But so many people. I listened first. I remember, like Stan Motif, he's a religious broadcaster, and yet that was an appeal for an audience where people came to know Yah. So Jerry is convinced that he has an audience. There's some people that are genuine truth seekers. It'll be open, and and so I'm committed to doing it. We'll see. Not optimistic.
Well, I look forward to hearing it,
but. We're going to try, and we'll see how it turns out. The guy is obviously very popular to have the size of an audience that he has. It's a much larger audience now than Coast to Coast, so he's been very successful. And we'll see if he sticks to what they said they were going to do on the covenant and translations of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Out of Hebrew into English, and what they actually reveal vis-a-vis relationship versus religion.
Yeah.
I hope Terry's right.
Like I said, if it hadn't been for the shows you did on Islam, you know, I never would have found you. I found you listening to David Gold, one night at work, and I had my headphones on while I was sweeping and cleaning, and heard you on about Islam. I was like, wow, this is a new take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is interesting. Let me look into this.
Yeah. Evidence and Reason.
I might not be where I am now.
Right. Yeah.
You never know what, maybe
you
one or two people out there in that audience will actually come around. So it's worth an attempt.
Yes. Agreed.
Well, say hi to Miss Rebecca and wear your seatbelts. Okay?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And we'll try to not get in any more hit and runs.
Yes, sir.
There you go. I've driven down in that area of Miami. The traffic laws don't apply over in that area.
No, I've never seen a place where as high a percentage of people were just flat out reckless. You know, you can be driving along, and there is somebody willing to drive over 100 miles an hour in a 55 or 60 or 65 zone. It happens all the time, and it's prolific, the number of people willing to go over 100 miles an hour. And
I thought Dallas area traffic was bad. Miami the Miami, Fort Lauderdale area was the worst traffic I have ever driven in my life. And I've been in a lot of different cities. It is bad down there.
It's really bad. Yeah, and the road system is wholly inadequate, and the drivers are just nuts.
Yeah, they don't care. Stop
no,
sign, don't
really,
care.
Really bad judgment here. And I think it's a lot of it's because South Florida is the cocaine capital of the world.
Oh, everybody's on.
Yeah, so many people are intoxicated.
Well, then you got the language barrier. So many people.
Well, yeah, English is the second language to. Yeah. You can go to places and you speak to them in English and they just look at you like, get away from me. I don't speak English here. Now, you might say, so why do you live here? But, Fort Lauderdale, for the most part, it depends on the area that I live in. It is really, really wholesome and nice, and it's really beautiful, and the water's spectacular, and the weather's spectacular, and it is really
some of the best seafood I ever ate was at a restaurant off Fort Lauderdale Beach. We went to a restaurant there, had some of the best seafood I've ever ate in my entire life.
Yeah, we had restaurants overlooking the Atlantic and on the A1A, which is the boulevard here in Fort Lauderdale, and then Las Olas is the restaurant shop street. It's a block from my house, and I have a house that sits out there towards the peninsula and has panoramic views of the intercoastal, and it's just really uplifting. It's I love the light and the water and the sky, and just really pretty, and that's just the time of my life. I needed that vista, that long view that was so just beautiful and active and happy, so that's what it is here. And there's wonderful places to go visit and eat, and so many of them here now are like we had dinner tonight at dinner at 3:30 and a very late breakfast and an early dinner, so we'd be prepared to do the show. And we had an encounter with our next door neighbors that invited us over for a meet and greet. We had this lovely chat with this couple, talked a lot about Yahweh and the Torah and the like. So you go to places that are just charming, where it's sole proprietorships and there are no chains and just nice people and you feel like family when you show up. So there's a lot to like. So long as you're not driving on the interstate with people going.
Yes,
you can
avoid that.
20 miles an hour. Yeah. And it was funny, tonight on Las Olas, it was like time warp, because like every third or fourth car was a muscle car from the 60s and 70s. And the guys driving them were impressed by their noise. And so they all had these reverberating mufflers that, they would go on, and it was just so loud. Who are they trying to impress? That was kind of an interesting experience. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to shove off. I look forward to this next week, and may we will have a receptive mind or two out there tomorrow night.
Good evening. Good luck tomorrow. Right. We'll be listening.
Okay. Good night.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Shalom.
Shalom.